On this episode of Your Secret You, we take a look at a couple clips from previous recordings that I've done, and the first one is about suffering, the true meaning of suffering, which you will probably find surprising considering that the definition of the word has changed. So we take a look at that, and then hypnosis, the various states of being that we find ourselves lost in throughout the day, throughout our lives, and it's quite frightening, quite deep, and hopefully in the end it's all uplifting and enlightening. So without further delay, let's begin.
And I don't remember exactly how this started or how we got there, but I found this little snippet from the Bible, just a small little thing. And he was talking about, I really should just find it so I could tell you exactly what it was. Okay, I don't remember what chapter this is, but this is the passage. It reads, "Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel, and not frightened in anything by your opponents. This is a clear sign to them of their destruction, but of your salvation, and that from God. For it has been granted to you that for the sake of Christ, you should not only believe in him, but also suffer for his sake, engaged in the same conflict that you saw I had, and now hear that I still have." So to break that down a little bit, let's start with Christ. So here's this man, and he hasn't done anything wrong, for all intents and purposes. He's maybe upset people, he's offended people, but he hasn't done anything wrong to do that. He's just been telling the truth. He's been telling people what's right in front of their faces. But that becomes so painful and offensive, and the resentment, the world begins to resent him so much because they don't understand him, that they want him dead. And Christ says, well, it's not that you've literally murdered somebody that makes you a murderer. It's hating them. Just by hating someone in your heart, you're a murderer, even though you haven't killed them, literally. And so at the time, there were some people that understood what he was talking about, and so they followed him. But a lot of them hated him, and they hated him so much that they wanted him literally dead. They weren't just angry at him murdering him spiritually. They actually also wanted to literally kill him, but their law said that they couldn't do it. The old law. And so they had to get other people to do the killing for them. But you see how hypocritical that is? Do you see how deep that gets? Because, I mean, it just proves the point so beautifully. Because they thought they were still, because Christ said he came to magnify the law, right? That's what he said. He came to exalt the law, to lift it up, to clarify it. And so here were all these people saying, I hate this man. He's terrible. I want him dead. But I'm not going to kill him, so I'm still following the law. And Christ says, well, if you hate someone in your heart, you are no different from the man who brings bloodshed. And they proved his point because they killed him. They actually killed him. They hated him to the point of killing him. So you will naturally, the same sort of thing is playing out right now. And maybe, in some places you will get murdered and have all sorts of terrible things happen to you for telling the truth. In America, still some very, very bad things can happen to you, but it's relatively speaking, it's better. There's a level of tolerance here that isn't found in other places, but My point is that the same types of things are going on. And the same things that Paul was experiencing and what he was writing about. So by telling the truth, there are going to be people who hate you. There's going to be people who, I mean, they have no business to hate you. You're just talking about things. Let's just say for the sake of conversation that you just have some opinions, all right? And other people don't like your opinions. And they hate you for it. You haven't done anything to them, but they hate you. Just by being honest. Just by not being repressed. So, naturally, Paul went through a lot of conflicts. He went through a lot of different, very difficult things. And the focus comes down to the word suffering. The word suffering in that passage. I'll read it again, because this blew my mind, because we ended up talking about this word suffering. And I had a sense that the way he uses suffering in this passage is not the same way that people usually think of suffering in conversation. So it says, this is a clear sign to them of their destruction, but of your salvation and that from God. For it has been granted to you that for the sake of Christ, you should not only believe in him, but also suffer for his sake, engaged in the same conflict that you saw I had, and now hear that I still have. So what do you think of when you think of that word suffer in that context? I went and I asked my wife about this, and we had a good talk about it. And I asked her, I said, what do you think of when I say suffering? Like, what's the definition? And she says, basically, it's pain. Suffering is pain. And so when you're suffering, you're in some kind of torment. And then I went and looked up the word. And believe it or not, that is not really what suffering is. I mean, that's how people use the word now. But Merriam-Webster, right? Suffering. Transitive verb, to submit or be forced to endure, to feel keenly, labor under, or to put up with especially as inevitable or unavoidable. And that blew my mind, because that is a completely different word from the word that most of us know. Now, I've heard of the word suffering being used in a different way, like it's used to, like you might suffer a, I don't know, you suffer a, well, there's a difference between suffering a stomach ache and suffering what's a good example? Suffering a job loss. Maybe you would feel pain over that, but on another level, you are forced to go through something. And that's what Paul was talking about. He wasn't talking about being in pain for Christ. He was talking about enduring inevitable things, enduring things that are placed on you that you have no control over. And just knowing that you have no control over it and you just have to endure it. And that's just a completely different attitude from the world. And so that blew my mind. So really what he was talking about was something very strong. Suffering is strong. You have to be strong to suffer. Because if you're weak, you just die. You just wither up and crumble and die. Because you have nothing to stand on. Nothing to stand for. You just get blown around in the wind. But if you just relax into that, relax into the things that you can't control, and you don't know what you're going to do, but you're just, this has been placed in your lap and you have to go through it. So suffer through it. Endure. And so in that sense, I fully endorse suffering. I do not endorse the suffering where it is just feeling pain. And it's like, it reminds me, bringing it back to art. You hear this a lot. Some people say, people talk about suffering for their art. And it's kind of a meme. I don't actually hear a lot of people saying it honestly. Unironically, but people make fun of it. And so it's the kind of thing where it's like, oh, if you make, you have to suffer for your art for it to be good art. And the reality of it is actually, if you're suffering, the quality of your art is terrible. I don't know where I heard this. I heard this too. When I was growing up, I heard at some point that depression somehow makes you a better artist or something. Depression makes you creative, or it's tied to creativity in some way. And in my experience, if you're depressed, you are a worse artist. You are a worse artist. You are less likely to finish things. You're less likely to do a good job, to be objective about what you're working on. Just kind of on all levels, like your productivity goes down. You really just suffer like you would if you just suffered, you know, I don't know, pushing papers at some soulless, meaningless job. It's the same kind of thing. Like, what is it for? And your output's just terrible. And I don't know. I never understood that. But that's the kind of suffering that I hear people talking about. But the real suffering, the suffering that's where it's at, is enduring. So yeah, whatever you are going through in life, endure. Endure it for Christ's sake, because you have the only thing that you can lean on in life, which is faith. If you lean on anything else, you're just going to fall down. But if you lean on faith, you'll always be standing up, even if the world tries to knock you over. Hypnosis. We're going to talk about sleep, dreaming, illusions, sleepwalking. There's a word, it would do you well to look up this word, somnambulistic. Somnambulistic. It is the word for sleepwalking. And this is something that struck me pretty hard, because I realized this a while back. There's so many levels to this. People are not only unconscious in their waking hours, like they're walking around, they're moving, they're doing things, they're thinking. Not only are they unconscious in everything that they do, because everything is being curated, right? Everything's being fed through the thoughts. Thoughts tell you to do this, you do it. Thoughts tell you to do something and you do it. But not only is that a level of unconsciousness, but you could also be, I'm looking for the right word here. You could be coming in and out of it. You could be coming in and out of that sleepwalking state. And maybe you catch a glimpse of the truth. You catch a glimpse of something that's right, and you fall right back into sleep. And people will actually try and keep themselves asleep. And this is how this works. I realized that books have this quality to them. Now, it's kind of ironic, because I was just talking about books. But in a practical sense, books can be useful. But talking about, like, let's talk about fiction. Let's talk about escaping with books and things. When people read to escape, reading is a form of hypnosis. And I realize this because, have you ever read a book? I've read a lot of them. Maybe you read a book that is really frightening and you have no reason, no rational reason to be afraid, but you read something and you find your body and your mind is reacting. You are now suddenly afraid in your own home because you read something. That is only possible because you have entered a hypnotic state. That's just the best way to describe it. And people will say things like, well, hypnosis isn't real. It doesn't happen. It's some scam, right? And maybe, yes, on some level it is a scam, but you know, people will do like phony, like spiritual things. But if you have ever experienced that, where you've been in your head after you read something, you read a book and you feel afraid, or like, you know, people read romance novels to feel a certain way, and they find they feel different after reading the book, that is only possible because you have entered a trance. That's what it is. As a lifelong reader, as someone who has always enjoyed reading, I've realized that it's just so deep. There have been so many, like, for example, there are books that I've read or even movies. This applies to movies as well. Have you ever watched a movie and the first time you saw it, you didn't like it? And you were like, oh, these characters are fake. It's, you know, they're cardboard cutouts. The situation isn't plausible. It's, you know, blah, 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 blah. But then maybe years later, you sit down and you watch it again. Or maybe you're watching with a friend. Let's say you're watching with a friend and your friend was like, I don't understand what you're talking about. That was incredible. A part of that comes down to being in that hypnotic state. And there are times where you may be more or less susceptible to it, more or less susceptible to being in that type of trance where you're in your head and you're in your thoughts. But that's what entertainment and media and so many different things do, is they get you in a trance. If you get someone in a trance, you can get them to believe things that are not real. And it sounds completely ridiculous. Like, and when you read that on paper, it may sound silly, but it is 100% real. And all you need to prove it is that experience of believing something yourself, being frightened when you read something, being emotionally affected by something that isn't real, because in your mind has been relaxed and coaxed and cozied up, I guess, right? You've been led, you've been lured in. And then the author, the storyteller, whoever, they can do whatever they want once they've done that. And this is how so much evil in the world works. When you get people angry, it does the same thing. It gets people in a hypnotic state. There was a short story I read a couple of years ago. I recently found out, the writer, famous novelist Peter Straub passed away. But he was a very good writer. There in particular, there was a short story I read from him, and it was called Blue Rose. And I highly recommend reading it if you can get the chance to. It's a long short story, but it's about two little boys and their brothers, and one is much younger than the other. And the older brother, he finds a book on hypnosis, and he decides that he's going to try and use this on his brother. He's going to learn hypnosis so that he can get his brother to do things he wants him to do. And he starts small at first. He's like, you know, I don't know, just move your body this way, that way. It's been a while since I read the story, but he gets him to do little things at first. And the story keeps ramping up, and you know, every now and then he gets his brother alone and he's able to hypnotize him again. And he gets him to do increasingly more and more horrid things. And he gets his own brother to damage his body, to stick needles into his flesh. And eventually this leads to him hypnotizing his brother to get him to kill himself and make it look like an accident. On some level, you know, this is just a fiction story. This is just, you know, it's entertainment. But there is a very real level to what we're talking about, but it might not be on the level that you would think. The way hypnosis works, this is how cults work too. This is the same type of thing. Even the hypnotizer is unconscious. This is the fascinating thing about it. It's like, you know how some cult leaders, they believe their own lies? That's really what it is. It's because they're hypnotized and unconsciously, because they're asleep, they're awake, but their consciousness is dead. It's dormant. And they're able to influence other people who are asleep and get them to behave in certain ways. And that's how you can build up these cults. And you have these uprises, and you have these bloody revolutions, and you have these horrendous things that happen. Think of like terrorist groups, or you think of something evil that was done on like a group level, like Jim Jones. That is a type of hypnosis. And that hypnosis is not very different from any other type of hypnosis that you see on TV, in the media, on the search engines. It's a similar type of thing. If you can get someone angry or upset about a social issue, then you can influence them to get them to do what you want them to do. It's very simple. But it's people they're not present. They're not aware that this is happening. In that sense, even the hypnotist isn't aware of it. And another thing, just to add layers upon layers to this, the writer Stephen King, something interesting I thought he said, this was in an old interview. He said that the process of writing is a type of self-hypnosis for him. He hypnotizes himself in a way to get his mind into the story, to think about the characters, to think about what's going on. You think of some books throughout history. For example, like there's a book called The Jungle by Upton Sinclair. It was written as, if I remember correctly, it was written as a socialist propaganda. It was supposed to be an anti-capitalist book, and it tells the story of how horrible capitalist America is and how the businesses have people working in complete squalor and people are eating what equates to sewage and garbage and they're barely clinging to life and everybody who's working is kind of dying. They're fearing for their lives and they're always just hanging on to life by the tips of their fingers. It's a soul-crushing book. But that's why it was written. It was designed to crush people's spirit. Say, you don't have any chance in America. You don't have any chance at doing anything or being anything or having freedom. You're just going to be a slave and you're going to suffer and other people are going to get rich off of you. And then you're just going to die in a horrible way and be unremarkable. And it will all be for nothing. And in some sense, that idea of the world is coming true. We're watching it happen because the people are believing that. But this is how these ideas proliferate. They get people into a trance. The ideas end up injected in there. They're in people's heads, and then people go around and they unconsciously live that out.
Well, that's all for the show today. And just a quick reminder, there is always a way out. Thank you for listening.